Metaphysics or physics is the much-needed and crucial voice of reason in the philosophy of science, rarely found anywhere else in the world today. We are equipped with the fundamental principles of a rational philosophy that gives us the edge, may make us misfits in the mainstream sciences, but also attracts rational minds to our community. With this show, we are fighting for a more rational world, mostly by looking through the lens of the philosophy of science. We raise awareness of issues within the philosophy of science and present alternative and rational approaches. We are your hosts and guides through the hallowed halls of the philosophy of science. Dwayne Davies, my husband, is the founder, primary content creator, and voice for Metaphysics of Physics. I am Ashna, and I help out however I can. You can find out more about us on the About page of the website. You can also find all the episodes, transcripts, subscription options, and more on the website at metaphysicsofphysics.com.
Hello, welcome to episode 24 of the Metaphysics of Physics podcast. I am Dwayne Davies, your occasional host. Today, we are going to interview Warren Fay, the co-author of the book Creating Christ. We are going to discuss the archaeology of Creating Christ. We have talked about this book before. We interviewed James Valiant, the other author of this book, way back in episode 10. That was a great interview, huh? Well, we have one with the other author of the book. Let's dive in, shall we? All right, thank you for being here, Warren. Let's start with something a little fun and then dive into the more serious questions. Do you and or James have any of the coins from the book?
It's amazing how readily available those coins are. I don't. I got a Vespasian coin for James at one point a number of years ago. And it was like 50 cents, you know, it was at a convention. The Flavians minted millions and millions of coins, and they're still quite available. And so we don't. Someday I would love to have a fish and anchor Titus coin. That's certainly something I will obtain at some point.
In the book, we see that the cross was not the first primary symbol used by early Christians. Tell us about some of the earliest symbols they used.
Well, if you go back to the very first catacombs, the very first evidence of archaeological evidence of Christianity, what you'll find is that the symbols they were using were not the cross, but the anchor, either flanked by fish or wrapped around by a fish. And so these are the earliest symbols of Christianity that we know of. And it wasn't until about two or three centuries later when Constantine instated Christianity as the official religion of the Roman Empire that he switched the symbol to the symbol of a cross, because he had seen a cross in the sky during a battle. And as he saw that vision, it turned the tide of the battle and he won the battle. And so he decided to instate Christianity as the symbol of Christianity, or the cross as a symbol of Christianity. And his mother actually traveled to the Holy Land and, as legend has it, brought back a piece of the original cross. And that was all part of the propaganda that instituted this new symbolism. But before that, the symbol for centuries was the fish and the anchor. That was the predominant symbol of Christianity. And it was also the symbol, of course, used by the Flavian emperors, Titus, and very briefly, his brother Domitian.
Tell us about the mosaic we see on the front cover of the newest editions of the book.
Yes. Well, that, of course, was buried by the eruption of Mount Vesuvius in Herculaneum only 2 months after the Emperor Titus succeeded his father as Emperor of Rome. And it was an amazing find, because it was almost like a legend for the symbolism used by the Christians. And this is of course, there's no archaeological evidence from the first century of Christianity that has been recognized as evidence of Christianity. So this predated by decades, the first catacombs in which Titus's own niece is buried, was buried. And that symbol that is on his coins of the dolphin wrapped around an anchor is echoed throughout those earliest Christian catacombs. So this symbol, this particular mosaic, was on the bottom of a pool in a gymnasium in Herculaneum that had originally been built by the Emperor Augustus. And so it was an imperial gymnasium that would have been under the care of the Flavians for decades, because before then, Vespasian, the father of Titus, had also a Flavian, had been emperor for 19 years. And so there were always earthquakes going on in Herculaneum because it was right next to this active volcano, Vesuvius. And so they were constantly having to repair the bottom of pools, right? Because they would crack and then the water would leak out. And at the time of the eruption, there were two pools in this gymnasium, one of which had been drained in order to effect repairs on the cracked bottom of the pool. The other one that had this mosaic was filled, indicating that it had been recently refurbished. So that would have been refurbished by the Flavians, certainly. And here they are using this symbol, which is reflected also on Titus's coins, where you see an anchor flanked by two dolphins and two people swimming towards the anchor. Exactly the sort of thing you would see in Christian catacombs for the next two or three centuries. So it predates Christian use of the symbol by decades. So that was astonishing when I first found it. I called James, I think, at 3:30 in the morning when I came across it, and I was absolutely flabbergasted to see what that pool actually indicated, which at that point nobody else probably on Earth knew exactly what an amazing find that particular mosaic was in terms of historical significance.
Which artifacts show us some of the religious syncretism going on with the figure of Christ? I believe, for instance, that there is a depiction of Alexander the Great as Helios, and this seems to have inspired depictions of Jesus.
Yes, yes, there are plenty of, of course, the mystery cults of the pagan world, the Hellenic world, are combined with the Christian concept of the Messiah in a way that's undeniable. I mean, from Dionysius to Sibyl and Attis to Apollo to the sun god, all of these pagan elements are combined within the idea of the Messiah that the Jewish people would never have incorporated into the idea of the Messiah. They had to have come from the pagan world. And we can see those, you know, even Hercules, you know, dies and is resurrected, and Dionysius is, and Osiris is, you know, dies and is resurrected. That is a very common thing. And Mithra was, you know, born on December 25th in a manger, visited by three wise men from the East. And you know, that were followed a star, three magi. That's all, you know, that predated Christianity by hundreds of years. And yet here it is in Christianity. So yes, there are lots and lots of different pagan influences in the syncretic conception of Jesus Christ.
Why was the sun god shown on a coin of Titus?
Yeah, very good question. Sol was a sun god and came from the East. And of course, as the sun rises in the East, and he was also, you know, he's associated with Apollo. Apollo was a healer god, and Jesus is a healer god as well, who rises from the East, from Judea. Just as Titus and Vespasian made their bones, so to speak, in their campaigns in Judea to the east of Rome. And so they came from the East and rose to the throne of Rome by their exploits in the East. So the idea of using a sun god was convenient for Titus to use on his coins. And also the Flavians were seen as healers of Rome because they had just gone through a giant civil war. The fire of Rome had devastated 70% of the city of Rome. And then, of course, the Jewish war. And there was a giant war of succession, a civil war between who was going to replace Nero after he died. And so this huge, tumultuous time of history for Rome, and the Flavians saw themselves as healers who were going to now repair all the damage that had been done in the last couple of decades in Rome. So that was very convenient for Titus to associate himself with Sol and with Apollo, these Eastern healer gods.
We see the anchor symbol used by early Christians on Flavian tombs.
It's absolutely astonishing, because why would Christians be using symbols that were employed by the Flavians on their coins and on mosaics, for instance, the one in Herculaneum, and in architectural details in, for instance, the Temple of Venus that the Flavians built, and also in the Colosseum, which the Flavians built the Colosseum. It was originally called the Flavian Amphitheater. And so all of these symbols are being employed by the emperors of Rome, even in the Colosseum, where Christians were supposedly thrown to the lions, which clearly history makes this a very inexplicable parallel between the two groups. How could Christians be using imperial symbols used in the Colosseum itself, only a few miles away from their catacombs? It implies that there certainly was some kind of a relationship between the Flavian dynasty, the Flavian emperors, and Christianity. And there is really nowhere around it. There were so many different symbols that Christians could have chosen, certainly ones that were not pagan, right? Considering that it was supposed to have been a homegrown religion and came from Judea, who already would have had great prescriptions from using pagan symbolism, especially ones that denoted a Roman a pagan god like Apollo, which is the dolphin as a symbol of Apollo. And the Jews would never have allowed that to be on their coins. And that they had elaborate money changing set up just so that people would never donate coins with that kind of symbolism to the temple in Jerusalem. So yes, the fact that the earliest symbols the Christians used are the same symbols that the Emperor Titus used throughout their archaeology and coins and mosaics and so forth, that is a profound problem for the traditional view of a huge conflict between the Roman emperors and the Christians.
Say you had an elevator pitch and you could present like two or three bits of evidence, which would you choose?
Well, I would certainly choose the coins of Titus, because that symbol of the dolphin wrapped around the anchor is precisely the symbol that was used on Christian rings and insignias and seals and grave sites by Christians for 300 years. So the idea that they're using the identical symbol needs explanation, and it's not explainable by the traditional historical view. And then, of course, the Herculaneum mosaic, since it was captured in a time capsule in 71 AD, we know exactly how it was dated and who built it, and the fact that prefigures Christian catacomb symbols by decades is astonishing right by itself. Also, there are certain cameos that were created for the upper class that show the dolphin at anchor and were dated to the time of the Flavians, that are also identical to the plethora of rings and seals that Christians would use for the next three centuries. All of that overlap, that archaeological overlap, it's a smoking gun. It really is. That shows a link between the Flavians, a hard evidence link between the Flavians and the earliest Christians.
Not that the book needs any further evidence, but has there been any other interesting archaeology found that is not in the book, which you would point to anyway?
Yes, there are some other additional interesting points that we didn't explore in the book. It's interesting that the entire nativity of Julius Caesar, for instance, is missing from all three histories we have of his, all three biographies that, existed today of Julius Caesar. That one part of it, we just don't have of the history of, Julius Caesar. Now, Julius Caesar was one of the first to introduce Mithraism, Zoroastrianism to Rome in the form of Mithraism, a kind of modification of Zoroastrianism, which is where we get the Zodiac, for instance, from Persia. And he brought, he was one of the ones who imported that religion into Rome. And of course, that's where we have the whole, you know, Mithras being born in a manger and visited by three magi who followed a star and brought gifts and, you know, on December 25th and all that. That all comes from Mithraism. And so the idea that perhaps Julius Caesar used that too for his nativity story, and that that was too inconvenient for the church in the next 2,000 years to preserve, and therefore that was extracted out of all of the biographies of Julius Caesar, is quite possible. We know that Titus was born on December 30th in a sort of a slum apartment, and so he already kind of overlaps the Jesus nativity in certain ways. So that's something we didn't go into, but it is a remarkable lacuna in what has been passed down to us about Julius Caesar.
Okay. Is it possible to see any of the artifacts you two discuss in the book? And where could one go to see them?
Well, there's actually some people, a crew of a film crews going through Italy right now to some of those sites for a future documentary on the book. And those would be, of course, Herculaneum. Various villas in Spain show the dolphin and anchor, mosaics as architectural details. And catacombs, the earliest catacombs before the time of Constantine, you'll see just a great number of dolphin and fish symbolism, examples of that symbolism being used by Christians. And the Vatican has, you know, it's interesting that at the Vatican you can see a lot of statues of Vespasian and Titus. So obviously Italy is where you would go. Instead of Judea, by the way, you would go to Italy and you would go to other Roman provinces to look at the Christian catacombs. And there you'll see, like I say, just a great number of examples of the Flavian symbology being used by Christians.
Okay. You and James were apparently the first to see the evidence for exactly what it is. What do you think stops others from coming to the same conclusion? They can look at the same evidence and come to the same conclusions.
Yes. Well, it took us 30 years of really immersing ourselves in every aspect of this period of history, even to notice and recognize what we were looking at. You know, I had been convinced that we would find coins that showed some sort of link that could be tied into Christianity from an early time, from the very beginning, actually, 35 years ago. I was sure we would find something, but it did take that long to finally find it. And, you know, my mother had visited Rome some 15, 20 years ago, and she had brought back a souvenir from the catacombs of Domitilla. Now, Domitilla was the niece of Titus, or the cousin of Titus and the niece of the emperor Vespasian, and her catacombs are the earliest archaeological site of Christianity. So that's pretty interesting by itself. But my mother had brought back the souvenir that showed the famous anchor flanked by two fish, as the one earliest symbol of Christianity. And here I am looking through coin after coin after coin, and I'm seeing Titus, and on the other side of Titus's coin, a dolphin wrapped around an anchor, and it just never clicked. It was just hiding in plain sight. And finally, one day, it just like, wait, that's it. That's it right there. And I called up James, and he said, oh, well, you know, maybe that's like a common symbol. You've seen it in, you know, even today, you can buy pendants like that at the Vatican in Rome. So, you know, he said, well, possibly other Roman emperors had used that symbol. I said, no, you can't find any other emperors who used it except Titus, briefly his brother Domitian. And then later, during the Second Jewish War, Hadrian used a limited edition of that coin. And so by that time, it was fully a Christian symbol. So that is that was just a eureka moment. And it's astonishing that it has never been noticed before, actually. I can't explain it, except that it took a long time for it to sink in for us.
Well, I guess many people do not want to see that. That is certainly not what they would expect to find anyway.
I can imagine that too. And in fact, you know, in Herculaneum, the pool that has that mosaic, that is a sort of a cross-shaped pool. It, not that the cross had anything to do with it at that time, but it's just like sort of a plus shape. And in the middle was a fountain. And the other three parts of that plus sign are still buried. They've never been excavated. Maybe they didn't want to excavate any more of that particular pool. The Flavian temple in Herculaneum has also never been excavated. So there probably is a lot of stuff in there that maybe people just didn't want to see. I don't know.
A lot of scholars in your field have started to come around to this thesis. For instance, Robert Price. Which evidence, archaeological or otherwise, have they found the most convincing?
Well, and just in terms of archaeological evidence, certainly it is just inexplicable that the earliest Christians would be using the imperial symbols of Roman emperors. That by itself is just simply not understandable or explainable in any other way except that they were somehow related to each other. Then not only that, but the earliest Christians also used tridents wrapped around by dolphins as well. And that symbol is also used by the Christians. So the Flavians and the Christians used dolphins and tridents, and the Flavians and the Christians used dolphins and anchors. And those were the predominant symbols that the Christians used for three centuries. And then right on the heels of the Roman emperors who literally coined those symbols. So yeah, that is the most convincing archaeological evidence. In fact, the first physical evidence of a link between the Flavians and the Christians.
Which piece of archaeological evidence did you find the most convincing?
Yeah, well, those were it. Those were the things that really sealed it. And I think that once the Herculaneum mosaic was found, that really, really did tie down the use of the dolphin and anchors, because it literally was telling you that the dolphins represent people, right? Because there's two people swimming towards the anchor and there's two dolphins swimming towards the anchor. So it's equating the dolphins with people. Now, of course, in the Gospels, we hear of, you know, go out and be fishers of men, right? It's a trope that goes through the Gospels. Fish are a common symbol throughout the Gospels. And the idea that the missionary project was like fishing for men is perfectly demonstrated in this symbology. So yeah, it's that has to be the most fascinating overlap right there.
Which artifact has the most interesting backstory? Would you care to tell us this story?
Well, I think that the Herculaneum, what's fascinating about the Herculaneum mosaic is that it had to have been repaired very recently, because the earthquakes were happening so often right before the eruption of Mount Vesuvius that we have archaeological evidence all throughout Herculaneum and Pompeii where of repairs that were being done when the volcano erupted, because there had been so much damage in the months leading up to that eruption. So that's an interesting backstory. We see one pool that has been drained and is being repaired, one that has already been repaired and is filled. And that nails down the time of when that was built. And that must have been built during the time that Titus was almost co-emperor with his father. Had to have been, because of these interesting geological facts. So it really does, and the fact that the whole place was buried in 71 AD, it just completely seals it in chronologically. So that's probably the most compelling historical background of that particular archaeological site.
How long has all this amazing evidence been available? Why do you think some of it may have been overlooked or misinterpreted? I guess we kind of covered the last one.
Yeah, we kind of have, but you know, that's kind of one of those questions. I mean, we also don't know how much evidence has been destroyed or covered up or deleted. Like I say, we don't know what the birth story of Julius Caesar is, because it was completely eradicated from every mention. And of course, the keepers of all of those records were the church for thousands of years. So a thousand years, at least during the Dark Ages, they were the ones who either reproduced the ancient history or didn't. And therefore we don't see what was lost. So much of it may have been just simply lost through time. A lot of it may have been deliberately covered up and lost. And then the rest just simply people looked at it and didn't see what was going on or denied it, you know, just, deflected it. So we have to understand that it was heresy punishable by death until the last three centuries to, you know, suggest what we're suggesting in this book. So that's a good incentive not to recognize any of this, isn't it? You'd end up literally burned at the stake. So yeah, in the last three centuries, people have been able to, and that's only then if people started to take a hard look at some of this information. So that's part of it. And, we finally ended up looking hard at it for 35 years until it was, finally we unearthed this particular archaeological evidence.
All right, that is all we have for today. Warren, thanks for your brilliant and interesting answers to my questions. On the next episode, we will hear from Warren again. Yes, he generously agreed to record two interviews on two different topics. What will we be discussing next time? His best-selling fiction works, Fragment and Pandemonium. Tune in for the next episode to find out more about that. Thanks for listening.
If you find value in these podcasts and would like to support us while getting access to bonus content, please consider becoming a patron. You can do so easily by visiting the patrons page on the website, link provided in the show notes. Thanks to all those who are already patrons of the show. Remember to check out the website to read more articles, subscribe if you like our podcast, sign up to our email newsletter, or follow us on Facebook, Twitter to get the updates. You can also check out our Metaphysics of Physics merchandise if you wish. All profits from these go back into the show. And as always, you are welcome to send in questions to questions@metaphysicsofphysics.com, or you can also contact us via contact@metaphysicsofphysics.com. If you want to talk to us about physics, philosophy of science, any of the other sciences, or anything relevant at all, we are always looking for more people to interview or appear on the show. Please tune in for the next episode and start thinking of some questions. Until then, stay rational.